Sound check.
Seriously, I need to deodorize the room.
I've
got a horrible feeling that if I lean back at some point,
I don't know how you do it, mate.
There's going to be a holy shit.
You need to regulate your voice to the same level as me and Dave.
Okay.
That means don't speak like you.
Right. Okay. So I sit further back. Is that going to be easier?
I mean, I've got compressors, mate. It's perfectly fine. It'll all even out.
He's got a little fluffy dildo.
Testicles, 1, 2, 3.
Rich,
one, two.
A loud voice.
Rich, hello, what? Hello, what? Kiss my chuddies.
Yeah, we'll turn that down a little bit.
Welcome to episode 19 of the Cinemortuary podcast.
19?
Point fucking team.
Oh no.
My name's Rob. Sitting to my left is Dave Walker.
Sitting to your right, stage left.
Stage left. Actual right is Dave Walker. So we've got a problem this week, Dave.
Yes, mate, what's that?
Well, this week's episode is Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. Or, as some cultures would say, DOS. And we sent Wilson out on a fact-finding mission.
Well, to be fair, due to various factual mistakes on the part of Christoph J. Edgar Wilson,
yes,
as a punishment, we have sent him out into the field to record some kind of live plot-finding events.
Correct.
How are you getting on, Chris?
When you said I was going to Maryland, I thought you were on about the cookies. What the fuck is this?
He's currently in Burkittsville, Maryland, trying to find the plot of Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2, without much success. So we've had to do something quite unprecedented.
Yes.
We've had to bring in a guest host
to
the Mortuary Podcast this week. So I would like to introduce the official early noughties FHM correspondent for the Cinemortuary Podcast. To my left, Mr. Richard Foster.
Evening.
Hello. That was very understated. I was expecting you to drop your pants
short
and
of discussing
shit,
Gail Porter for the next 2.5 hours and how she got a naked ass flashed on the Houses of Parliament. I don't think there's really anything that can, barring being the very definition of definition as was discussed earlier, I can't really talk about
it's not that kind of podcast, Rich.
Other than Gail Porter's bottom on the Houses of Parliament.
Just googling Gail Porter Burt.
Yeah, it's not that kind of podcast, but he's googling.
Honestly,
anyway.
Have a good look. It was well worth it. It's barring Guy Fawkes being in this wonderful city as we are.
It's gonna be a long
the
one.
Best thing that's ever happened to the Houses of Parliament.
Dave, do you want another drink?
And I say that as a former civil servant.
Well, Big Rich gave me two drinks because Eleanor wasn't drinking, so I've got two pre-drinks here.
So we're good. We're well lubricated vocally.
Yes, mate.
That's the main thing.
So what film are we doing, Rob? Is this your choice?
Yeah, it is. I'm really sorry about this. It's Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
Yes, mate.
From the year 2000. So I'm going to hit us all with some facts. And just set the scene a little bit. In 1999, the Blair Witch Project was released. It was the most profitable independent film ever made, replacing a film called Halloween.
Is that in proportion to its cost or in general?
That is adjusted for inflation.
Okay.
So that is in proportion. The Blair Witch Project, the original, was made for $60,000, including a publicity campaign, which was, as I'm sure you will remember, Rich, quite notable.
Yeah, I remember it being a very sort of one of the first sort of almost online kind of interactive...
Yeah.
Reality,
see, we were kids
like
at this
Big Brother
point,
almost, sort of reality
shit,
TV kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one really knew whether it was a genuine thing or a piss take, for want of a better expression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, made for $60,000. It made, in 1999, do bear in mind, $248.6 million.
Yes.
This sequel was greenlit from pitch,
yes,
rather than seeing a script, which is probably something to note.
I think that we may well come back to that at some point in the next sort of hour or so.
The cynical man in me would think, got someone here.
Yep.
If we do this again, we're going to make loads more money, and if it's shit and people don't like it, we've still got $500 million in the bank.
Yes,
that's what I would do as a smart version of
that's
me.
Kind of common sense in any kind of business. Yeah. If you make that kind of return for effectively a fart in the wind, as that initial investment would officially be titled.
So the facts on this are pretty extraordinary.
Mm.
So you've gone from the most profitable independent film ever made and the sequel's greenlit immediately. Mm-hmm. This film cost $15 million to make, and it made $47.7 million at the box office. And it was not so much... I mean, obviously, that is a financial success, but nothing like what they expected.
Yeah.
The real issue was the critical response.
Ooh.
This film was considered to be so bad that, again, bearing in mind, the most profitable independent film ever made, I can't emphasise that enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Was never revisited as a franchise after this for 16 years.
Yes, mate.
That is very much shitting on your own front lawn, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It's,
and I would put
wow.
this film down to... obviously, there was the last broadcast that came out around the same time. It was about the Jersey Devil.
Yeah.
And it's essentially the same sort of setup, which is found footage thing. Obviously, Blair Witch coined that term, but this is essentially the same sort of thing. Came out within maybe a year of each other.
Yeah.
And you would think found footage from this point will keep going on a nice little riser.
Yeah.
I attribute the death of found footage as a mainstream focus point to Blair Witch 2.
But it's not fucking found footage, mate. Spoilers.
I know that, mate. But what I mean is it just stopped it
yeah.
dead in its tracks. That whole momentum, and it did not come... And obviously there are found footage films throughout the noughties, but if we're talking mainstream, turning over 200 mil plus, it doesn't come back around till about 2007, 2008
yeah.
with Paranormal
yeah,
Activity sort of thing. So you fucking do that. Are you fact-checking me? You son of a bitch.
It's only just occurred to me that calling Dave a cunt by sign language doesn't actually work on a podcast.
Oh, is that what that was? Yeah. I thought that was a thumbs up, mate. Sorry.
It's a good job we're tagged explicit.
That is bullshit, by the way, if you're doing sign language.
Got you.
No, I was thinking in my head, because you were saying about the fan, and I'm thinking there's been... What was the film with they built the time machine? And I can't think what it was called. And that was only 4 or 5. Chronicle. Is it Chronicle? No, Chronicle was the one with the young superhero kind of people,
yes,
wasn't it? When
yeah.
they found the
was it Time Crimes, the French film?
No, it was it was around. I can't. I'm really sorry. I shouldn't interject unless I know what I'm talking about. But it's never stopped me before, so I doubt.
Well, some people know what you're going to be talking about, so it's absolutely fine.
That's okay.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I've forgotten how good
yeah.
nerds can how wonderful listeners can
yeah,
be
exactly.
when they listen.
So do
please edit that out. I have a horrible feeling they'll know where I live.
Do tweet at us if anyone knows what Rich is talking about.
What's he talking about?
So back to the... just want to do a little bit further housekeeping before
we dive
into the meat and bones of it. So, a few things to note about this film. Number one, it was directed by a chap called Joe Berlinger,
mm-hmm.
who's not worked since, and he's probably working in Argos now.
He has a little bit of TV. He does TV, safe haven for people who've had a terrible film and just want to let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does do documentary.
Right, so he's still alive as a...
He's doing documentary
at least he's
stuff,
still working, because
yeah,
I think there are some credible points to the film that show he has an ability.
Yeah, you can tell he's a documentary filmmaker
at
times.
There's certainly some bits that are not a complete car crash.
Yeah, no. And the film suffered from studio interference, which was something that he kind of cited as a reason for the film not being successful.
Yeah.
And I sort of did a little bit of further research around this,
mm-hmm.
and the studio interference was not really typical. So he might have a point here, because the interference was...
Can I just stop you there? Hold it there one second, Rob.
Do you want to crack it?
Instead of doing thumbs up and doing weird poses with bottles and yoga and shit, you just do it.
You sure?
Just do
yes.
it.
Okay.
Just do
yeah.
it.
Right. Okay.
Just do
we're
it.
Some
fine.
Belches and grumbles, and then
fine.
Tells me to fuck off on microphone. That is all fine. That is part of the.
Well, it's part of the experience.
I just didn't want to give you.
No. I vape like this. So yeah.
Okay. That's fine.
Just do what you need to do.
Yeah,
mate,
I didn't want to make it.
People like to know what we're doing.
Yeah.
If Rob's having a poo, the listeners want to know.
As an entirely sort of newbie to this, then.
Yeah. No, you carry on, mate.
My apologies.
No, you carry on.
Chuff around all you want.
Oh, in that case, then I should have a wank in the corner and.
So the film is significantly altered.
If that doesn't make the edit, David, I'll be so disappointed.
So, back to my original point.
And we do also have a nice new photo for the
here
feed.
You go, Rob, here's a mic.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. So back to what I was saying. So the film was significantly altered in post-production. Now, you might think, yeah, that's a wanky load of old shit to cover your ass.
Yes.
However, I will list off some of the things that were changed, and you can tell me whether he has a point or not.
Okay.
An entirely new soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
That's... That is kind of noticeable. It seems to have been a soundtrack that fits the time, not the film.
Yeah.
Does that
are we talking soundtrack
of,
or score?
Soundtrack.
As
yes.
in... record. Yes.
Needle
sorry,
drops.
Yes.
Yeah.
Music as opposed to incidental
music. This is obviously in reference to mostly They were going to open the film with Frank Sinatra's Witches.
Yep.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft.
But they changed it to Marilyn Manson for no reason. Continue, yeah. Rob, sorry.
Next one, additional editing.
Yes.
And finally, the integration of entirely new sequences.
Yes.
That's not a great sign if you're a director.
No.
I mean,
no.
if they take an edit off you, that's bad enough.
Yeah. Yes.
But if they suddenly start adding bits in,
random ass
you
shit,
really are in very, very, very deep trouble.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm. we spoke earlier
about American History X and Tony Kaye.
Yeah,
effectively disowning what's seen as a really, really good film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But because he'd bad-mouthed it, they wouldn't let him title off it.
I think if you get test audience feedback that says it needs this and needs this and it needs extra scenes and the director stays on to do those scenes, that is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, because you're keeping the whole theme of the film, aren't you?
Yes.
You're keeping the person who had the idea, who has the narrative through thought, then that works really well. But if you bring in, you know, John Smith, or Alan Smithy, if you like, to come in and cut in and shoot. Yeah.
I think the only exceptions to the rule these days are Joss Whedon and Andy Serkis.
Who came in because of, I mean, Joss Whedon came in because of a pretty horrific family issue with
Zack Snyder.
Thank you.
Yeah. And made a perfectly acceptable film, which I watched the other day.
To be honest, I've not seen it, but
it was okay.
I've heard similar to yourself, it's perfectly acceptable,
So before if you're going to dive into
plot
and whatnot,
continue.
I'm going to tell you mine and Eleanor's little bizarre story with the Blair Witch.
Go, fire.
So, watch the first one for the first time.
It's fucking good, isn't it?
It's fucking good. Yeah.
Really
very
good
well done.
It's one of the few films I've ever seen. I mean, for those who are listening, obviously, don't understand that while we were all at university together, I am 8-9 years older, I think, than both of you, give or take.
Yeah.
There is enough of a difference
for it to matter, because you were a teenager.
I saw it legally first time at not at university, obviously, at the cinema. So I was 16 or 17. It was a 15 when it came out, which was a really big deal, because at that time, 18s were still what horror films were.
Yeah. And the culture for that film is just pinpoint intercontinental missile directed at your age group.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's one of the most perfectly marketed, pitched films. If you were to do a film now, that marketing campaign is still point one, point two, point three.
That is
the binder on the desk of every independent film producer's marketing campaign you will ever see.
And the most incredible thing about it is that no one can do it again.
No, because it's been done. I went and saw it at the AMC in Chinatown in Birmingham. I'll tell you right now, and the reason I know this, it was the 9:15 screening. It cost me £5.80 to get in, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yep, perfect.
Absolutely freaked me out.
And
the best bit was, when I came out, people said to me, why were you scared? I said, I don't know. Because there's no real blood in it, there's no real... It just ramps everything up to 9.5, and it does not turn it off at any point.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from 0 to 60 in 18 minutes, give or take,
and, I think
then leaves you there for the last 65, 70, and just absolutely ruins you.
Yes.
Hit us with your story, Dave.
Hit us with the story, yes. No, you're right. So, got a hold of the Blair Witch 2.
Yep.
Saw it was quite a meaty file size, because obviously I do own it on some other dead format, but my other format happened to be inaccessible at the time due to magnets or some shit.
Yeah, I bought it for £2 off Amazon, other online retailers.
I could not find my VHS player. How weird is that?
There we go, and so, the download we had, we watched it straight off the Jeepers Creepers 3. And Ellen has seen it many times, because for her it is one of those kind of cult films that is, what's going on? This is amazing, this is awful. And she, through the first half an hour of the film, I think, she was saying, I don't remember seeing this. I've seen this 10 times, I don't remember seeing this. This scene wasn't in it. This scene is much longer than I remember. And about the halfway mark, it got to 1 a.m, and I thought, fuck me, this is dragging. So we checked the length of what was in the playlist, and it was 2.5 hours.
Mine was exactly, and I mean exactly 90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Not a second above, not a second less. 90 minutes on the dot.
You might remember that I put up a status the next day on Facebook which said, accidentally saw the director's cut of Blair Witch 2.
Yes.
And everybody was in a buzz about it because, like, holy shit, where'd you get it? I want
to
see this.
I remember you sat and I remember thinking, I'd like to see that because clearly we will come on to the. We've spoken about the director's issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd really like to see the film that he wanted to put out, considering the studio thought this was better.
Yeah,
yeah.
If that makes any sense.
And I googled Blair Witch 2 director's cut, and then I found out the festival cut and several fan edits. Well, I didn't know about the fan edits. The festival cut was 2.5 hours long. So I thought, oh shit, we got like a director's cut. This must be new out for the remake film. It was to come out at the same time, capitalise on the money.
Side kind of marketing.
Yeah, yeah. I told you about it. You were like, what the fuck? Shut up, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
And I downloaded another copy, which was bang on 90 minutes. And we were watching it and we thought, no, all this was in the version we saw. That's real confusing. So we googled it. And again, we found the festival cut was 2.5 hours. But the version we saw a second time was 90 minutes. Like, on the screen, there in front of us, the same video player, everything the same. Tried to find the file that I deleted, because I'm good at computer housekeeping, obviously. Yep. I'm 10 years clean. No viruses for me. George Formby antivirus when I'm cleaning windows. Yeah. Could not find it at all. Did lost file recovery, which 99% of the time... works.
Well, find what you're looking for.
Yeah, and it's just not there. The original version I had is not there.
This is not fair, because I was going to ask you for this 2.5 hour cut, so I could watch it.
It doesn't exist. We lost an hour, though.
So,
and on that timeline, it said 2.5 hours. The only thing I can think of is that it was 2.5 hours in at the point I checked it, and Jeepers Creepers 3 was counted on the playlist. That's all I can think of.
Unless there is another theory.
Oh, fuck.
This could be yet another Cinematry attack of Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
Where are you? We got some work to do now. I don't recall this. Have I? I've listened to every episode, and I'm fairly certain I've been name checked and libelled in at least two of them.
Well, that's pretty true.
The only scene that we know is different that we remember wholeheartedly is, you know, the other film crew they meet in the first act. They meet them previously during daylight,
right?
Without the Chinese tourist with them.
Okay,
which maybe sort of makes sense.
Which sort of makes sense. We thought, oh, that's
because he was massively aggressive to a load of people who were just doing what he was doing.
It's cause and effect. It's nicely done, which is not in the second version we saw.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is the only lead we have.
Well, in the event, in the interest of avoiding the 2.5 hour director's cut of this episode of the Cinematry podcast, I'm going to dive in.
But yeah, I just wanted to mention that because
it's weird.
These films are meta. They're very meta.
Very meta.
Films within films within films within life, aren't they?
It was a very bizarre situation.
So, yeah. That is fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
That is... Seriously, if you find that 2.5 hour cut, I'd really like to see it.
There was two of us, and we were both very sober, so I don't really...
Well, I don't know. Now you're pushing it, Dave. I mean...
Not very fucking realistic, is it? Wilson, how are you getting on in the forest, mate?
Yeah, so far so good. I went into the local town where I've met some fellow Blair Witch 2 enthusiasts, and they've also heard about the legend of this 2.5 hour cut. So we've gone into a forest to go find it. We've had a couple of clues as to where the tape might be. And our tour guide, Hans, is just now showing this really big tree that wasn't here before, apparently.
Well, anyway, there we go.
Yeah, never mind.
I'm sure he'll make it back all right, lads. Don't worry about it. We'll give him a tickle.
So in we dive. I'm just diving in now.
Just go.
Right, so the opening sequence I quite liked. It's very frenetically edited, and it's very much sort of reflective of the first film in many ways, and it is, like you say, that whole meta thing going on. Mm-hmm. So what we've got is a montage of sort of news pieces about the original Blair Witch Project, and interviews with various news stations, various experts in the area, including a cheeky Roger Ebert cameo.
Yep.
Yes, I saw that, and I was missing the double thumbs up.
Exactly, yeah.
Hi, I'm Kurt Loder with MTV News. The film is The Blair Witch Project.
Critics have called it one of the scariest films of all time.
I was terrified.
Oh, it scared me to death.
It all starts out lighthearted as three documentary filmmakers armed with a 16mm camera and a video camcorder head into the Black Hills Forest of Maryland to make a movie about a legendary witch.
and they're never heard from again.
It starts off great guns, this, for me. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I was on board. There was a bit
of
industrial soundtrack.
Yeah, I was very, very sort of excited about it. You'd got the kind of, as I said earlier, the music didn't... I wasn't convinced by the music that was over the top. I mean, I didn't know it was Marilyn Manson.
Disposable Teens,
yeah.
Is it?
Disposable Teens, yeah, yeah.
Which
sadly,
is
a bit on the nose. Yes. It's not really my kind of music, no. But
it's point
didn't feel
one
like it
fit, of
feel. It didn't feel like it fitted. Sorry.
No, it doesn't. No.
Nope. Sadly, he's not here. He's still looking for the plot, but we're missing out on the Chris Wilson interpretation of Disposable Teens, which is unfortunate.
Wilson, are you a fan of Marilyn Manson?
Sweet trees are made of these. Oh, sorry, Dave. This is a really impressive tree.
Anyway, yeah, so yeah, we good. Had that. That was a thing that happened.
And with the title font as well.
Yeah, which I've... here's the thing. I've got a question about the title font.
It is from Charmed.
Why is it... Yeah, why is it from like a sort of mid-90s medieval kind of film setup?
I'm going to say this. This is point number one. This is two in one, actually.
Right. It's a twofer.
I feel this is some kind of weird Paul Verhoeven attempt at satire of 2000s culture.
Right.
I think this is either shit or someone has done this on purpose. I know this is a production thing to choose that song, but it adds up to so many things later on.
It is so on the nose. Yeah. It can't have been done.
Yeah. It's either
it's
a checklist.
It's not somebody's gone, I've heard that record and it's great, because as we've said, it doesn't really fit with the style of shot. I mean, it's a quite fast sort of shot over the leaves and everything, isn't it? It doesn't really fit.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, the use of the soundtrack all the way through is kind of curious. It's like... Mm-hmm. That you've got sort of stuff like the feel-good hit of the summer from Queens of Stone Age. You've got At the Drive-In. It's very on-the-nose kind of 2000s culture all the way through.
It's a cynicist checklist of can we sell this afterwards sort of thing. Yeah. And it ends with Haunted by Poe, which is a fantastic track. Yeah. It's the ba-da-da-da song.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah, so we have the weird credits, we have the weird funk, we have the Disposable Teens.
Yeah.
The Rob's unusual credit of the week that draws his eye was the composer.
Yes,
Carter
mate.
Burwell.
Yes, mate.
So I thought, I know that fucking name. So I Googled it.
Yeah.
And he is the, he's Barry Big Time, isn't he now? He's the composer for the Coen Brothers.
Yep.
And he's just recently done the three billboards outside Epping, Missouri.
Yes.
Fantastic.
This is from quite a bizarre point in his career. Definitely pre-Twilight, obviously, where he did Psycho 3, which was Psycho 3.
There's a Psycho 3? What? Hang on a minute.
There's a Psycho 4 as well.
Is that the one where he hits his mother over the end of the shovel at the end?
That's Psycho 2.
Is that Psycho?
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Right, fair
Real
enough.
Real mother.
That,
yeah.
was the, that was the BBC half past one ITV, in the morning when I was a kid. I remember, because she has that really weird when they just fatten her neck latex.
Yeah. And... It's bizarre because that's kind of like a weird trip hop thing. And then he did Miller's Crossing, which is one of the most beautiful soundtracks ever. It's up there with Tom Newman's Perdition, Road to Perdition.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful kind of Irish
really
folk orchestral soundtrack. Then he does this, which is kind of music that is existing.
Yeah.
Which sounds like some sort of weird.
A contractual obligation.
Kind of. It's like if Nirvana teamed up like with a band in South Africa and just fanned about with wind chimes for a couple of hours and released it as an album.
You know when you walk through generic town centres, like Northampton town centre on a Saturday afternoon, and you find four random North American Indians playing Last of the Mohicans on some blowpipes.
With a trip-hop beat underneath.
Precisely.
It's quite a bizarre
Precisely
sound.
Precisely that.
Yeah.
Yep. It's that kind of, they've paid me, I've got to do it.
Uh-huh.
This
but it is Carter Burwell,
kind of
and the extras do say that he put a lot of work into it,
which is
weird.
This film is not entirely irredeemable.
No.
There are good sequences in it. There are some. There are five or six really good plots. It's just that none of them get properly finished at any point.
Five or six really good plots. Wilson, have you found any of them plots yet?
Well, Dave, we've decided, because it's getting dark, that we're going to go to a warehouse tomorrow morning. So we've set up a fireside, taken a shitload of drugs, and we've paired off in a massive orgy. Unfortunately, because there's five of us, I'm the odd man out. And this is exactly what it sounds like.
No, anyway, still working on it. So we'll dive into the sort of introductory sequences so we meet our sort of cast of players over the next few scenes. We jump back and forth in time a bit, some weird cuts between a fucking mental institution and present day, and then eventually we get a flash across the screen of the date of November 12th, 1999.
Yes.
Which is A, very specific, and B, is my Mrs. Amy's birthday, which we were both a bit freaked out by when
that
we
is
were
very specific,
it.
Yeah.
So, we meet our team, our cast of players. One of the group is your standard issue goth Dave, obviously.
Nice.
And as a ginger myself, have to go. Lovely ginger Wiccan.
Lovely ginger Wiccan.
Wiccan.
Sorry, every time you say Wiccan, I have to do the thing that he does on the tour bus.
Not only a hottie, but a real witch.
Blessed be.
Oh, Wiccan. Wicked good.
Whoa, wait.
Where he just says, Wiccan.
Yeah, so we get into basically some pretty sort of forgettable sequences have been introduced to our main cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then before we fucking know it, they're in the woods.
Have we got nicknames for all these guys, by the way? Because Wilson normally has...
Yeah, he does,
I've got a very good one. Your main man, Jeff, I think, is it?
Yes.
Is part sort of... he's 50% Randy from Scream and 50% Screech Powers from Saved by the Bell.
I was going to say there's a lot of James Franco in there, if you ask me.
Do you think so?
Yeah, he looks like James...
I was just thinking he genuinely looked like Screech Powers.
Yeah.
Some might say by the Bell. Yeah, Randy from Screech.
That's Screeching Randy. Yeah. I mean, that does sound like a sex act involving an ice cube and a bottle of rum, but... How you choose to spend your Saturday evenings, Robert, is entirely up to
you. Exactly, yeah. So we start off with, like I say, this sort of unnecessary introduction scenes that are a bit strange, and then before we fucking know which way's up and which way's down, we're stood in the middle of a forest in a wreck of an old house with a tree growing through it.
But the tree appears, doesn't it, Rob, out of nowhere?
Yeah, the tree appears out of nowhere. This is something that's a big deal, apparently. I was instantly confused by the concept of the tree being...
Is this the house from the first one?
Well... This is like in 99 as well.
I'm told it is, but it's bizarrely destroyed.
Rebel. It's destroyed. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't make any sense that something that supposedly had stood there for centuries had disappeared inside a year.
Which I think is something that has hit the cutting room floor.
Well, this is where we're getting now into the point of the film that it is a connection of scenes that seemingly are missing several
context.
Scenes that lead up to why things are the way they are. There's the great scene, as you've just said, that this tree wasn't here before. Now, we've no reason not to believe this guy until this point.
Yes.
Yet all of a sudden we're expected to not believe him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
You know, I mean, and then he actually makes the really good point of going, well, this tree wouldn't be here because it's inside the house. Who the fuck puts a tree in the living room?
Who does the house belong to? It's the guy who murdered the kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
This Rustin Parr guy.
Rustin
Parr. Yeah, yeah.
Who is actually in the film at the halfway point? He's actually a character.
We're going to come back to him a bit later on with some retreating children.
So I'm just going to dive straight into the next sequence, which is... Rob's horror cliche moment of the week.
Sorry, that's not a hoe.
It's not a hoe, but fuck it. Yeah. Dodgy, sexy fireside scene with dodgy, sexy chat.
Yes.
Between dodgy, sexy people around the turn of the millennium.
It's written by the kind of people who've never had sex.
Yes.
You know when you speak to people who, you know when you're at school?
Yeah.
And there's always some kid who's got a girlfriend in Canada?
Yeah.
Or a girlfriend at the other school that nobody ever meets?
All right, fuck
and
off.
And he goes... I can't help but feel... Well, to be fair, I think all three of us may well be guilty on this particular charge at 13 years old. But...
Guilty on this charge at 19 years old.
Guilty on this charge at 31, mate.
Dangerously close myself. But that nobody actually... That's the way people who are writing about sex think people talk about sex when they're not having sex.
Yeah, we've got pretty much everything going on. We've got promiscuous Wiccan.
Wiccan!
We've got...
Grumpy goth.
Grumpy frigid goth.
With a big pair of whoppers.
We've got James Franco. God knows what his dig is. And we've got basically a married couple.
who are possibly the most boring human beings I've ever met in my entire life. Yes,
we've got kind of all the spectrums covered in this group.
It is the most contrived. There we go.
Sorry, listeners. I've
nicked Rob's job.
Hang on a second, I'm getting someone in. I think we can maybe cut to Chris Wilson here.
Wilson, how are you doing over there? Is it contrived?
Hans has had this brilliant idea where we've all stripped naked and are now chanting around this tree, and I think it's sort of making a ghostly sign and it's pointing us in a direction heading towards some sort of haunted warehouse sort of thing. So I'll report back soon then.
Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, very contrived. It hits all the possible kind of different sexual dynamics you could get in a group, but everyone is speaking from something from the writer's perspective, who clearly is not.
He's on his own. 18-year-olds written by a 40-year-old.
Yeah,
it is the most sort of. What boxes are we going to tick? There used to be a story that in Disney they had a chart.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're making a 100-minute film, you have 18 minutes to introduce your characters.
Mm-hmm.
By the 18th minute, you must have introduced them.
Mm-hmm.
By the 38th minute, you must have beginning to be sending them on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
By the 70th minute, the journey must be concluding.
Yep.
And by the 100th minute, it must be finished. You're done. Every mm-hmm. fucker's out the door. Good night. God bless. Thank you for your money, and the credits are rolling.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is how films were. Walt Disney used to say that is how you make a film. Yeah. 92 yeah. minutes, that is how you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
beginning, middle, end.
Mm-hmm. At this point in our narrative, we're still fan footage, pretty much.
Yes.
And then we get to the campfire scene, and the campfire scene is the point in the narrative where we are now intercut between fan footage and normal footage. Now, there's nothing wrong with the construction of this in itself,
no.
But in the context of the original, and you know, it's not a film that's trying to be like Halloween 3 was, where it's something different from the mythos that came before. It is completely entrenched within that mythos.
Yes.
So as a result, it's very, very fucking jarring, and I can sort of start to see immediately why it was a bit of a bust at the box office, because this stuff's featured on the trailer quite a bit as well.
Yes, I mean, found footage, and we'll say third person footage to reference video games is something that is very hard to do. I mean, some people obviously cut their first feature film careers on films that were mixed found footage and third person footage, didn't they, Rob?
Yes, they
and
did.
Dave.
Was it the same film? It was the same film.
It was the same film, yes.
Yeah.
But even in 2012, it's very hard to pull it off.
Of course.
Convincingly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Dolly Parton used to say, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap. And yes. I think, and as I've said, this is the line I've got to get in, it takes a lot of sanity to make a film this crazy look good.
Yes.
And I think that, as we've said, there are parts of this film that are really good.
Yeah.
And up till now, interesting. Maybe not my cup of tea, I'll be honest with you, but still well worth watching. Then all of a sudden, undoes everything with a completely unsignposted jumping jar cut.
Trips over its own testicles, yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, I fucking nearly lost my shit, like. So, the campfire chat descends into a discussion about mass hysteria, which is something that, according to the director, the film was a kind of meditation on anyway. It's kind of in your face.
Well, that's what the couple are writing a book about.
Yeah, exactly.
For what it's worth, technically, David and your other half's name, I'm so sorry, I've completely...
Eleanor.
Both had it regarding the fact they thought they'd watched the director's cut. They were both utterly convinced.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody out there has had a version where they're absolutely certain they've done something.
Yeah.
That everybody's gone, well, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You can't have done that because you're in Sainsbury's with me on a Saturday afternoon.
Exactly.
You certainly weren't in Hole in One at the Belfry. Yeah. Stop it, because this is a Sainsbury's joke that's between me and David that we're definitely not going anywhere near.
Anyway, let's move on from the Sainsbury's joke, because I'm aware of it and it's awful. So,
I think you'll find I'm incredibly proud of it.
This sequence...
It's a baby boy!
Sorry, Rob. Go on, please.
If any of you found yourself buying fruit and veg in Sainsbury's circa 2009... I mean, precisely, that was a can of Lynx, by the way. So, yes. So if you were in Sainsbury's in York and you found your loaf was slightly damp, I could only apologise.
So this campfire sequence, anyway, when we start talking about mass hysteria...
Mass hysterics are happening as we speak.
It kind of reminded me of, and you were both in the room when we were at university, and we were sat down by some fucking crusty fucker and talked at about film history and how things are represented in film. It felt like these fuckers were sitting me down and giving me that lecture again.
Yes. Although they didn't tell us that we were lucky to be editing on computers, and they said that we should edit on film.
Well, this is it. When I was a child, I remember being told that there's no point learning to use a calculator because you'll never have a calculator in your pocket wherever you go. I think you'll find right now, Mrs. Hughes, kiss my ginger swingers, because I have definitely got a calculator. Not only do I have a calculator in my pocket, I have the answer to every fucking question that can ever be asked.
Hang on, Rich, hang on. I've got something coming in. Chris Wilson might have found some evidence on the ginger swingers in the wood. Will we cut to Chris Wilson? No, still nothing.
Nope, just some ginger swingers in the tent.
Yeah. So after the ginger swinger thing, we'll move on to the next little bit, which is the rival tourist group tip-up.
Yes, mate. For the second time in my mind.
Yeah. Can I just say, by the
collective
way...
Collective hysteria again, ladies and gentlemen.
The most ethnically convenient...
Yes.
Group.
We've got tick box exercise. So we've got our Japanese couple, we've got our American tour guide, we've got our kooky German Europeans, and we've got a couple of Americans.
Yeah.
Hey.
And I think there's a French... Is there a French person in there as well?
No, there's only three tourists, I believe, with them.
Okay, yeah, so... Yeah. So they're filling as many ethnic requirements as they can. They all have a bit of an argument over whose turf the ruins are, and then they fuck off again.
Check it out! Hargisville's funniest home video!
He's good shit out of me, man!
I knew it answered every single one of your wet dreams.
What the hell are you guys doing here?
We got a tour group, the Blair Witch Walk. What's your excuse?
Tour group, the Blair Witch Hunt!
Dude, no, I don't believe this. You know, you're supposed to look out for stuff like this. This is so not happening, man.
We have jurisdiction here. We have permits.
Oh, yeah? From Cravens? Bullshit. Let me see him.
Bullshit.
They're in the car.
Oh, bullshit!
Hey, let's put it this way. One of us is staying here tonight, and it's gonna be us or you. And it looks like us, you little bitch.
It's gonna come back at you threefold, man.
What's she saying?
Well, in the Wiccan tradition.
Shut up.
Your balls will fall off in 3 days.
Yo, guys, I think I can settle this. Just give us till dawn, and then we're out of here. We're cold, we're tired, and we're a little shook up. We saw something up at Coffin Rock today.
Yeah, up at Coffin Rock, scared the shit out of us.
Okay, guys, just stop talking about it because I am gonna freak.
I just want to go home.
Oh. Can we see this thing? Coffin Rock.
Blair Witch, go to Coffin Rock.
Jetzt hör mal, Magutsu. Ich bin nicht extra aus Berlin gekommen, um ein paar Bäume anzugucken, okay? Ich habe viel Geld dafür hingeblättert, also lass uns los. Ich will dafür was gesehen haben, okay?
Yeah, whatever. It's your money, Greta. Hey, next time, you guys take the Blair Witch Walk, all right?
Yeah, next time, take the Blair Witch Hunt. Here's my card.
Okay, call me. I'm on the web. All
right. Bye.
They were never seen again. Their footage was found a year later. Underexposed and useless.
Well, they ship them out to Thingy Bob Rock, don't they? And
Cannon,
said they saw some
not Cannon
stuff.
Rock.
Coffin Rock.
Coffin Rock. Sorry, my apologies. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this will come in again.
Oh, do you know?
Maybe it will come in randomly.
Nobody knows are random flashbacks, and we can't work out whether they're random flashbacks or random flash forwards or random fuckabouts or
red filters.
Some might say this is a bit contrived.
Sorry, mother and father. Mum, if you're listening to this, I apologise. And if Mrs. Hughes' family are listening, I apologise twice over
the C word. Jesus
I'm
Christ.
I'm so sorry. At this point, we get a montage of our gang getting fucked up to the theme of Feel Good Hit of the Summer by Queens of the Stone Age. For no fucking reason.
Yeah.
At this point,
but every other sentence to this point has been, have you got beer? Do need a beer, though. Cigarettes.
Oh, who's got
beer.
Weed?
Anyone got weed?
And at least
beer.
Two of those people being university professors or graduate students, don't look like, and I'm not disputing that.
They just get on with shit as needed by the plot.
I can imagine the production meeting for this involved a rather large A board and a lot of 40-year-old people who assumed this is what 18 to 25-year-olds do.
There's a lot of nice little things going on in the background here, but I'd like to put a particular shout out to something that tickled my pickle all the way through this film, which was, and it's established here, the beer they drink here and the beer that is bought later on in the scene where the goth girl goes to a garage for some booze. Anyone notice what the beer was called?
Did not.
It was in creepy goth font, and it was called Wicked Ale.
Wicked Ale would be better, surely.
Yeah. So there we go.
It's not a WKD or anything like that.
No, it's just fucking weird shit, isn't it? So, yeah, we move on from there, and the goth girl has a weird experience in the woods with the fake as fuck, and will be quoted from me from this point onwards as the weird fake judgmental owl.
Yes.
Who's clearly sort of
those eyes.
And
clearly fucking plastic.
Yeah.
bought it from a garden centre for about $15.
The most judgmental looking fucking owl in history of cinema. No, you shouldn't be drinking that wicked ale.
Every time you see it, the eyes just go.
Some poor runner on the side with a fishing rod and a load of fucking line, dangling it over somebody's head.
Tell you what, it reminded me of one in heavy 90s referencing coming up.
Why bird?
Furby, mate.
Furby, Park Playbus.
It was a fucking Furby in a tree. Straight up, mate.
Was it Wybird that did that flappy thing?
Yes, she did, yeah.
Yeah, of course, that, ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't work on a podcast.
So, at this after this sequence with the Queens of the Stone Age and the bits and bobs that happen around it, shit is happening literally faster than I can write at this point.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I was at home, doing this. This is the sound of me writing.
For the
listeners, this is the sound that was always happening.
Too many
it was literally. That was me, mate.
Just on it, yeah.
Just all over the place. Couldn't write this shit down fast enough. madcap fucking montage of them getting fucked up. And then it's the next day. Now, this was one of my favourite little bits of the film, this. So they all wake up the next day to find all their equipment smashed up, and it appears to be raining paper.
Yes,
I thought that was a really kind of one of a more beautiful.
Yeah, it was my favourite.
Aesthetically enjoyable scenes, because it was.
It was my favourite.
Interesting.
It was my favourite sequence of the film. One of them. It was really nicely done.
I just want to point out
Silent Hill had come out about a year before this.
That was the one. That was the old Sean. That was old Sean Bean in the middle of the fog and the funny looking.
No, that we're talking about the game.
The old game, mate. Released in '99. I think was it '99, Dave?
'98, I think, for first Silent Hill, and I'm pretty sure.
But Sean Bean was in the film, wasn't he?
He was in the film, fucking around doing nothing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's basically what he's there for, isn't it, as a general rule?
Generally, yeah.
He's either dying or he's fucking about.
So this little scene in the morning features some of the worst acting I've seen so far.
Absolutely.
Fucketh me. Especially our mate Jeffrey, the main guy, who conveniently is played by an actor who is also called Jeffrey, presumably so that he doesn't get fucking too confused.
Ah, so
all of them have.
Can I point out some trivia there?
First names.
So originally in the first film, they used the exact same names.
Yep.
And they were going to do that for this one, but obviously, based on the kind of ferocity of the reaction to the first film. You just go for it, Rich. You're all right. If you just do it in one big one, then it's done and out of the way.
It sounds like the story of my first wedding.
In podcasting as well as life.
Yes. So in this one, they went with the idea, but people only refer to each other by their first names, but they called the characters, they gave them all different, slightly different last names so that they wouldn't have people contacting.
Isn't one called Director? Kim Director?
Kim Director is the goth girl, but that's not a real name, She's called Kim something else.
Yeah.
So they've all got the same first names, but the last names are different.
Right. I mean,
it's another strange aspect of the film.
Because normally you'd want to keep your surname, if you're planning to be sort of acting and you'd want to keep, I mean, Equity and Screen Actors Guild and all that kind of have fairly serious rules on names you can and can't use.
But I think this is a production thing where they jumped in and changed them at the last minute to avoid
everybody trying to dodge the bullet.
So
we've got a fucking terrible acting happening, and then we have a weird fucking sequence where Tristan, the bland blonde girl, bland blonde, has a miscarriage.
Which this is after Goth Girl has psychically found the tapes from the night before.
All the tapes have been suddenly noticed, don't they? It's the bleeding from the vagina.
This is the thing about this film across the board. It's like it fucking ponderizes and fucks around.
Yeah.
For like 15 minutes and then everything happens at once. And then it ponderizes 15 minutes and then everything happens at once.
But there's so much happening, they just bizarrely gloss over a miscarriage.
Yeah,
which is posted up with a nightmare sequence, which is quite nicely done, and the music from Carter Burwell is very nice over this. And then there's people just fucking around and shouting and arguing about stuff while she's bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that leads into a hospital sequence, and everything is just kind of...
But it's too quick. It's also
the fastest discharge, if you'll pardon the expression, the fastest sort of discharge from a hospital following that kind of incident. I mean, I can't imagine it's not something I've ever had any dealings with, but I can't imagine it's a matter of you go in, you have a shower effectively and get thrown back out.
Yeah.
I imagine there is some kind of psychological or psychiatric counselling.
Yes.
For both the mother and the father, and it sounds awful for the other people that have witnessed such a thing.
And where every sequence in a hospital or mental institute in this film, especially this sequence, the photography is always very bizarre.
Well, it feels like a completely different film.
The shot I remember vividly is, because it's such a bizarre choice, is almost like a GoPro on the edge of the gurney, looking right up at her with blood everywhere, and it's like... That's a deliberate choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough. That's a very subjective, interesting shot, and it is quite shocking. But everything around it is just people... she should be all right, won't she? Just have a beer.
The stuff it's intercut with is very bog-standard stick it on a tripod, stick it in the corner, kind of going...
Yeah, yeah.
We're back to this whole idea of there's six different films going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So we... Flash forward then to Jeffrey being cross-examined by a sheriff. Now, this film at this point is fucking mad, but I'm really enjoying it, in a sense. And I quite like all of the sort of cross-examination sequences in the sheriff's station, because it kind of like... They're just vague enough to keep you on the edge of your seat.
There's enough anchoring going on.
Yeah. I mean, I get the feeling that this three-point... reverse narrative. I don't know whether that's the technical term for it, and I apologise for those who know more about film theory than I do. But this idea of flashback, this three-point flashback, I get the feeling this is the film the director wanted to tell.
Yes.
This kind of idea of, for those who've seen The Hole, there's a fantastic film, The Hole. Desmond Harrington, Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley, yeah.
Lawrence Fox, Thora Birch.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Basically, I think there's seven characters in the entire film, and the film is four of them decide to lock themselves in a hole. I don't want to tell you any more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Go and watch the film. Really is a fantastic film. It's about 2001, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's slightly later than this, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's honestly a very, very good film. Go and watch it. It's fabulous.
Nice. Rob's writing some notes down. Has he remembered something else? So say, fuck off, Big Rich.
I think I've just cracked the film. Here we go. But anyway, we'll come back to that later.
This is going
to
be a long one, mate. So
yeah, don't worry about it. It's all right. I don't need a piss. It's fine.
It's entirely my fault, ladies and gentlemen. I do apologise. If you never hear me again, you know why.
So after this, we go back to the group, and after the quickest miscarriage in the history of cinema, we go back to Jeffrey's weird storage place / home.
Which is a factory in the middle of the fucking forest. How does that happen?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So, she's just kind of looking a little bit like she's listening to the first My Chemical Romance album, the girl that's had the miscarriage.
A little bit wiped out, disenfranchised. Yeah, exactly,
nice cheerful music, having just lost your first child.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, to be fair, she didn't want. So actually fits with the character. Because she was only, I think they said 6 weeks or 8 weeks that she was pregnant.
Six weeks.
Yeah. I'm not entirely certain you can even know you're 6 weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
It seems like the absolute earliest point you may possibly...
I think there was a scene at the start where she just found out that
psychic
she was pregnant.
Girl.
Yeah, the psychic goth girl sensed she was pregnant and she didn't...
She doesn't want the child, does she?
Well, she was in two minds.
He seems to be very much more in the idea. But then I get the feeling he's a bit older.
Yes.
Yeah.
So whether he's a teacher as opposed to...
I love the way we're talking about psychic goth girl like it's very matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah.
It's at this point that her psychic powers completely dry up and no one cares anymore. Yeah.
I mean...
But it's a plot point that is like...
Back again.
Why? What?
Six different films going on, you know. It's,
he's fucking cracked it. He keeps going back to that
absolutely,
last page.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, Alan Turing has got nothing on our Robber. Robber's cracked the code.
Problem is, mate,
the
problem
Enigma
is,
machine can get shoveled.
Problem is, you've had like four shots of rum, mate. I don't know how this is going to hold up to an edit.
It's all right. I'm in the sweet spot. It's fine. So,
like this film, it's not going to fix in post, lad.
It will fix in post. So the we're back at as I say we're back in Jeffrey's gaff.
Yes,
and we have a quick introduction of the space. Dave, as we always talk about with you, we establish
this is
geography.
Done.
Would you like to take this one?
Yep. This is actually a really nice sequence. We first go across the bridge, and he establishes that the building is an old... I think it's like an old... Is it a steel mill?
A steel mill or a paper mill. Or paper mill would actually make sense, being in,
yes,
being in the middle of a forest, having just taken the piss for having a factory in the middle of a forest. Yep. So
we go across this bridge, which later on is... This is all foreshadowing and then payoff sort of thing.
Yeah.
He opens the door, which has... every time you open it, it plays the sound of guard dogs. He doesn't have guard dogs, but that pays off later on. We go past like the wardrobe, the CCTV, the door locks. This is all stuff that comes in later on. This is really nicely done. This is all really good telegraph stuff. Shows that he's got loads of film equipment that is maybe not stolen for resale value sort of thing. You get a nice little tour around the rooms, bottom floor, top floor. You get matey boy's missus's pretty much her only location for the rest of the film, which is a bed, in which she now and again sits up and goes, "What the fuck's going on?" as a voice of the viewer. And then we meet his edit suite, and basically that's... geography is in place. I like it. Throughout the entire film, I know where everyone is when they walk into a room.
Quick, get in quick! Come on, before they eat you! Come on, quick, let's go! Burkett County's cheapest burglar alarm.
And what's that do? Squirt water.
Oh, no, that actually works. Wave. It's recording you right now. I got him hooked up through the whole building. What can I say? I'm a little paranoid.
Ha! A little?
I heard that. But with good reason. I mean, I got a lot of valuable stuff here.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want somebody to come in here and steal a bunch of stuff that you've already stolen.
Hey, where it comes from originally is none of my business, nor should it be yours. I just like to pass the savings on to others.
Really? And how do you do that?
eBay. Buying, selling, trading, swapping. I mean, I'm a major player.
I thought all your cameras got trashed, Jeff.
Well, you can never have too many.
Yeah, I mean, this for me is the bit where the film actually makes some kind of sense.
Yes.
It actually, the second and a half act, if you like, from the second and a half act on, it actually makes a good film. You know, it works sort of narratively. Mm-hmm. You can understand from here on in, it feels like nobody's really chopped anything in or out.
Yeah. But the frustration of this film and the nature of it is that we get that really lovely sequence and we're kind of, we know where we are now.
Yeah.
But then it fucks it all up again.
Yep.
Because the next thing that happens is... there's a sort of intercut sequence of weird sort of Atmos type shit happening, and you feel like Jeffrey's place isn't all it cracks up to be.
No.
And then it literally just cuts to a girl ghost on the bridge that they walked in from.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pissed myself laughing because it's literally just... mm-hmm. a little girl that's had white makeup rubbed on her. It's just ponies.
And then she's kind of half exposed over the top, sort of.
It's you know, it's end of year, it's final year film school, bit of liquid latex, scruff it at the edges,
exactly,
sticker in a 90 and sticker in a, you know, have her as a slightly out of focus.
And the only difference is we never got taught to edit in widescreen.
Mate, we were barely taught to edit.
iMovie still counts anyway. So
2-1s all round, kids. 2-1s all round.
So and then we get a sort of a series of sequences within the weird ass fucking warehouse type house situation where it's kind of, it kills the threat because we've got a series of sequences of people just talking at each other.
Yes,
like there's no threat at all. It's just basically pretty insulting shit to the audience where they kind of sit you down and go, right, this is what we are, this is who this person is, this is what we think is the threat, but it's probably not, by the way, spoiler alert. And it's kind of that whole lazy approach to filmmaking.
If they just shot the entire film in that factory, first, second, third act, brilliant.
Yeah, but it's telling, not showing. Again, it's the
it's leading people by the hand. Let people watch, learn, and see for themselves. They don't need to be told everything. You can pick up by just watching. You by good filmmaking technique, you will pick up the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Without being led by the finger.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so we kind of get a bit of a sort of off the chain montage of sequences where the formerly pregnant girl's boyfriend has a scene where he sits down with the sexy ginger witch. There's a weird sequence where the partner of the girl who sadly had the abortion, not the abortion, that would be weird, the miscarriage, they kind of start making out.
This is where the runes appear, isn't it? These kind of
bruises.
Immediately, immediately in the sequence,
She lifts her shirt and she's got the sort of
But there's a really fantastic, there's a really weird sort of sexual fantasy sequence where they start making out and it's all a bit uncomfortable because his partner's had an abortion. Not an abortion, miscarriage. And then
he gets a slice
to the chest and
snaps out of it. He's like, bang!
Out of it. Yeah,
it's and really it's revealed that they're sat
opposite
end
ends of
a
the table,
long,
aren't they? A bit like Batman. The opposite ends of that very, very long table.
Or Citizen Kane, I was going to say, but yes, that was
well, you know, I think we both know that. See, right, here's one for you. Rosebud, Sledge, don't watch the film, shit.
Oh my God.
I think we know that's not going to make the edit, don't we? Sorry
sweet
about
cream
that.
On an ice cream sandwich. So, Jesus, I don't even know where to go with my life from there. So we then have our mate Big Jeff, Jeffrey, and the goth girl review some footage that they have recovered from the tapes that they found.
On the most amazing rewind fast forward DV tape I have ever seen.
Yeah, that allows you to pinpoint any specific second you want.
Unbelievable,
extraordinary,
man.
Extraordinary for a man who seemingly steals all the kit he owns.
On DV tape?
For eBay.
Oh, yeah,
fucking eBay. For fucking eBay. What's this for? There's £500,000 worth of kit you've got from somewhere.
Yeah, shout out to the resolution.
Oh, extraordinary.
Improvement on that.
Nip illusion.
Oh, yeah, when he says, don't worry, I can just enhance it, and he does the X-Files thing that they do in the photo lab every episode.
In every
just
TV
goes, yeah,
show
let me just bash spacebar twice. Nailed it.
Jesus.
Whoa. What the hell was that?
I'm not sure. See that? Whoa, wait. Look. Time code goes from 1:32 a.m. to 3:57 a.m. back to 1:32 a.m.
In the middle of the footage? How does that happen?
I don't know, but those were the hours that we fell asleep.
Can you make it bigger or slow it down or something?
Oh, yeah, let me try slowing it down. Ladies and gentlemen, that there is a naked woman.
What is a naked woman doing swinging around a tree? Are we sure these are even our tapes?
I'm not sure of anything in the last 24 hours. Let me try redigitizing this footage at a higher resolution so I can blow it up. This will take a few minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I used to work for the Home Office. For what it's worth, it will take you a fortnight to get anything back. Yeah. And most of it will come back going, nah, I couldn't do it, mate. Really sorry.
Yeah. So
the shitty, grainy bollocks. The only thing they can find is your fucking number plate at 90 miles an hour in the outside lane of the M1. Cunts.
Well, it's funny you should mention this. I'm just going to take a quick segue here because this is going to be the Dr. Zhivago of episodes of Cinematra anyway. So, further to your speed camera rant there, Rich, a friend of mine who will definitely remain unnamed for the purposes of this recording.
I would point out it wasn't me doing the 90 miles in the outside lane.
No one in this room. So, someone I know drove past a temporary van speed camera. Mm-hmm. They park up on the side of motorways, and they saw the flash, and obviously the operatives are in the back of the van, and they went round the front. They sort of went past the front of it and thought, motherfucker. So they pulled into the slip road opposite, sort of further along, and they, while the operatives were in the back, they basically unscrewed the number plates, the registration plate from the police van. They put it on the front of their car and they went back
around.
They went back around the motorway
and triggered it
three times and triggered it with the registration of the police van.
I think I saw that. And didn't I see that in the newspaper? Was that one of the?
It was in the local.
Oh, that is fantastic.
That's fucking funny.
It's like the bloke. It's like the bloke who got caught doing that with the van, and then pulled his car up in front and just lifted the boot.
Yeah.
Which happened to cover the front of the speed camera, so, and there's nothing the police could, because technically they're not police officers, yeah, they're civil enforcement officers.
Community support officers.
Which are hobby bobbies, as I believe they're referred to.
Yes. So back to plastic coppers, back to Blair Witch 2. So at this point,
As a former member of the Home Office, ladies and gentlemen, I feel that we should point out they are and do have fairly legislative, interesting powers. And good luck at getting that out.
Yes. Quite. So, we move on to this point with Erica, the witch girl. She basically sees the tape over the shoulders of the goth girl and Jeffrey, and has a bit of a freak out. And this is where Rich, the bit with the runes, comes in, and she starts freaking out all up around the runes, basically.
What does she see on the tape, though, mate?
Well, she sees herself, doesn't
she? Sees herself doing some fine pole dancing around a
small tree, which should have been the big tree.
Yeah, which is a really interesting sort of...
It's something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, again, back to the sixth. There's some really good plots in this film. If only they'd sort of started one properly and finished one properly, it might not have been quite the way it was.
Yeah, so while she's freaking out, she tries to explain that they've brought some kind of evil back from the woods. No one who's ever watched this film has ever been scared at this point. It's very...
Have we had a kill of the... I don't think we've had a kill of the week yet.
No one's dead yet.
And everyone realises at this point that they've had some weird fucking symbols carved into them at some point in proceedings.
Yeah.
And the goth girl decides, fuck this, I'm off to get some beers.
Because that's your response. Not fuck this, I'm out of here.
One of my favourite cuts of the film comes up here as well, where the goth girl, as she's leaving, the girl who sadly has a miscarriage looks up at the window, and we have our second appearance from the judgmental fake owl.
Ooh, should be doing that, should you?
That's becoming a trope of the film, I fear. We have a nice little sequence now where the goth girl goes for beer and has a bit of a sort of run-in with one behind the counter.
And she meets
Peggy, the seven children of Rustin Parr.
No. She meets Rustin Parr.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who's Rustin Parr?
Take it, Dave.
Okay, so the guy on the floor, in the original mythos behind the film, Rustin Parr basically is supposedly possessed by the Blair Witch, kills all these kids, and once he's finished, walks into town and says... it's either I'm finished or I'm done. Or I'm done here, I'm finished here. The guy who is underneath repairing the beer cooler says, don't worry about it, I'm done. That's Rustin Parr.
Right.
How fucking weird is this film?
I would never have known. So I've got to... Where have you got that from? Because that is not...
That's trivia that I read, but the guy under the counter is, in the credits, he's credited as Rustin Parr.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which is, it's another thing that starts and goes nowhere.
Yeah.
This seems to have been, as we were discussing, a kind of an entire media universe, not just a film universe, that was intended to be set up.
We should probably chat about the media... The meta-media side of this film?
Yeah, well, I was just going to come on to a little bit of this, so...
We're not in a rush.
The thing is, here, with this film, and it's unfortunate that it was shot almost out of time, because, like you said, there's so many interesting things that are done here, and there's so much going on that isn't followed up on, that this, if this film hadn't already happened, this would be prime Netflix TV series material. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
At times like this, it's very David Lynch commissioned by Netflix.
Agreed. There is really an entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was supposed to be computer games. I mean, there was computer games. The Rustin Parr was a computer game, wasn't it?
There are two computer games. Yeah, yeah. I can't verify what they're released on, and I've never seen them. But I think there are two PC games.
But this falls in with the marketing campaign, this kind of online entire universe being generated that was completely kiboshed, nixed, done. So, killed by this film.
Amazingly for me, I think, obviously I told you about my kind of experience with the film when I first saw it.
Yeah.
This film at the time relied on people taking away little things and then going onto a Blair Witch website specifically, and then going through all these fake documents and archives that had been concocted by the production team to kind of decode what they'd seen,
yeah.
Which is what we essentially do now. We go online and we Google what the fuck happened there. What is this point of that? You know what I mean? So somehow this film, its legacy...
It's massively ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But it has still endured.
Yeah.
You still have to go online to decode what happened. And I mentioned earlier the... You know the words that are implanted throughout the film? So the first one appears, I think, when we're distracted by Wiccan's midriff, when she's lying on the ground in some leaves. In twigs next to it is written a word. The second time is when they're sat opposite the table after the weird Freddy Krueger cutting scene. Written in the steam on the glass is another word. And
I vaguely remember seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you've said it.
Yeah, yeah. And the intention is you would put these words into the Blair Witch website, and you would find out some... I think you would get a list of words that were spoken by the witch. It would decode it, and then you'd find something out, and it explains what the children are, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, my understanding... Does she not say that the seven children, when she's in the car drive and has the slowest car crash ever recorded on film, that they're the seven children that Rustin Park killed?
Yes, but there's extra stuff.
There's lots of things happening here, and this was the next thing I was going to come on to. So you're quite right, and there's the seven children, there's the Rustin Park thing happening. But also, I mean, this is fucking naff, but it is also a thing that happens, is that throughout the film, everyone in the film is slagging off the goth girl and ostracising her for being a witch because she looks that way. And so what happens to her directly before she crashes in a van, it gets stoned.
Yes. Yeah.
Throw the brick goes through the back window, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's stoning, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that whole trope of...
It's quite cleverly done.
Yeah.
The last point about the meta stuff, while I'm talking about those words, is the words that were written down throughout the film are the first half of the sentence. The second half of the sentence comes later in the film, which we will talk about, when Miscarriage Lady just says a load of random babble. She just comes into a scene and says a load of random shit.
Yeah, she does. I mean, this is a lot. There's a lot of random babble coming up.
But this is literally, she talks nonsense. And like, it just sounds like muddled words. You listen to it backwards, and then you get the second half of the sentence. I shit you not.
I'm not disputing you, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just intrigued that they think anybody's going to try and go backwards through. Yeah.
People did.
Wow. Then
it's such a bizarre of its time.
I can completely understand why people, the way Eleanor has done, have thoroughly kind of
tried to
grasp this film and taken it as a wonderful catch-all for everything.
Exactly, yeah. And I just need to blitz through a little bit. So the van gets fucked up, and eventually she sort of makes it back to the weird house, and there's a lot of kind of things thrown at you once. So there's a lot of people arguing. There's more scars appear on everyone. There's a little bit more of that stuff happening. There's more cack-handed mass hysteria, film study shit happening. And in one of the more amusing scenes of the film, our fucking matey boy, the main man, the lead.
James Franco.
Fake James Franco, Screech Powers. It finds Erica's clothes in most hilariously placed out.
Like Neil Buchanan's just come in and rearranged them a little
bit. Set out as the world's worst kind of pentangle by somebody who doesn't understand how angles work.
I got the pent bit.
Exactly, and then Erica appears again, despite the fact she's missing, in a sort of zombie ghost form, and draws him out onto the bridge, which collapses, and he kind of like... Tristan, the formerly pregnant girl, stands at the bridge, won't sort of help him. It seems like she's been possessed by something.
Yeah.
And then the other characters sort of pull him up. It's kind of like there's a lot of things again happening at once.
It's sorry to interject.
Yeah.
There's another weird fucking thing. In the scene where Tristan, it's during this whole sequence, Tristan is walking around her room. She's got that big four-poster bed in the middle, which does move around from scene to scene.
The angle does change rather rapidly, doesn't it?
She walks around the room once, so the camera pitches that way, and then as she comes to the front of the bed and it pitches back,
it almost looks like it flips, doesn't it?
There's a picture on the wall which goes from something quite mundane to what I think is a woman hanging in a tree.
Which would back to the witch, aren't we? When they do mention this.
We're talking literally, there's some stagehands or runners. So as she's gone that way, someone has switched the portrait for when it comes back, it's different. It's so many subliminal things that would have cost really, really money
good.
To do.
There's too much shit being thrown at the wall. Yeah,
this is the problem. There is some really, really good practical filmmaking. You've got that beautiful scene with the shredded paper, as we were discussing earlier, and this thing with the pictures changing and the sets moving.
Where's it going, Rich?
And this is the point. There's no...
Rob knows, on the next page.
Storyline. Pick just one of the storylines you've started. And if you do that for 90 minutes, brilliant. Or in your case, 2.5 hours. Yeah. But just pick a fucking story and tell it.
Exactly.
Pick the fucking story and tell it.
Yep.
And so after that, we're disturbed by the sheriff braying on the door.
Yes, mate.
So there's a lot of banging and clattering. Jeffrey runs to answer the door, opens it up, and there's fucking three German shepherds chilling their beans out there for no fucking reason.
With the dog along going off.
Yeah, talk about throwing shit at the wall.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you speaking about the sheriff. Now, I can't remember, my timeline may have been a bit skewed here, but he is massively aggressive to the sheriff. I think the sheriff, when he was knocking on the door... Mm-hmm. Jeffrey is really quite aggressive too, and then there's a scene. Now, is it a bit later where he phones him?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off! No one's home.
It's Cravens.
Sheriff? Oh, it's funny because I just found out who trashed my cameras. I was just about to call you.
Turn on your TV.
I don't give a shit about the TV. I want you to see something.
Me too. News 11.
Shit! Will you just turn that on? Humor him.
You watching?
Yeah, like a hawk. Listen, I'm trying to tell you what I found out on Friday night.
This is a special report.
A brutal murder in the Black Hills discovered today. The bodies of five hikers found dead atop the landmark known as Coffin Rock.
Disemboweled, Jeffrey.
A grisly recreation of the infamous Coffin Rock massacre popularized by the movie The Blair Witch Project.
Bodies were laid out in the shape of a pentagram. Sound familiar?
We have received word that the victims include two tourists from China and one from Germany, as well as two unidentified white males. In the past year, the Black Hills area has been overrun with movie fans wanting to get a glimpse of where the Blair Witch Project was filmed.
Now, I don't know about you, but if you've got the local law enforcement phoning you, your first response is not to be that aggressive.
There is a bizarre sense of invulnerability about where he is.
Yeah, he seems to think that he's...
Because the sheriff is maybe 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
Some dead bodies at this point, spoiler alert. But he's like...
That we've kind of seen flash forwards or flashbacks.
Which
I don't think we've really touched upon this.
And we get
moment,
the flash forwards to Jeffrey in a mental institution at some point in the timeline.
See, now,
as well.
I took that as a flashback when he's being intubated and having the being force-fed. Because the sheriff...
That is a flashback.
The sheriff and the sheriff talks about him having been in...
Yeah,
hospital.
That is all prior to this film.
Yeah,
that is stuff. Yeah.
See, I thought I'd got the wrong end.
Right.
Of the
stick. Yeah, it's prior to the film.
But there's a weird element of detachment that comes with it.
Yeah, I mean,
that no one from the outside, people from the outside.
The entire thing could be him on his own, in that.
Oh fucking hell! Don't do that.
The next scene. I'm gonna move quickly on. The next scene. Erica is found dead, stood up in a wardrobe, which is a bit weird.
Well, haven't they been looking for her for ages?
Yeah, but they didn't look in this particular wardrobe. And she suddenly appears
but
dead.
No, he gets a shotgun out, doesn't he?
I think
he gets
it's a
the shotgun. Is it a different cupboard?
I think so.
I took it. The shotgun seemed to me to come from the same cupboard on the right hand side by the back of the door.
No, left of the door.
Yeah.
Is it left? I'll hold my hands up there.
The geography has been established, Richard.
Sorry, David.
Come on. So then that happens, and then everyone freaks out a little bit. The formerly pregnant girl has been pretty weird now. Like, we feel like she might have been possessed. And the goth girl suddenly has a fucking brainwave out of nowhere for them to run the tapes backwards. To see if they can find the missing footage from earlier.
Because that's how it works.
Yeah. Is this the point where Lady has spoken stuff backwards?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So then they get the brainwave from that. She's speaking backwards, watch the tapes backwards. All right, okay.
And boy, is it a brainwave. Because on the tape, we have the following things, and I wrote this all down in order. I'm waiting something from Chris. Have we got a message from Chris Wilson?
Wilson, mate, you all right out there? Have you found any bear traps yet?
Yeah, a bit distracted at the moment, to be honest with you. Just come down from all those drugs and such, and it turns out that we decided to kill Hans because we thought he was a witch. If I remember rightly, I took a hammer to his bollocks and kept pounding away until he died from the pain. So Back to you.
Yeah, he's fine anyway.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, so the tapes show the following things. They fucked up their own shit.
Yeah.
They ripped up their own shit. They made it. They made it somehow rain with the paper of the documents that they ripped up themselves. Had an orgy.
Yep.
And killed an owl.
Did everything that 40-year-old men still think 18-year-old kids at college do.
Exactly.
No.
Absolutely. Again, A board, ticking every box.
Yeah. Yeah. So at this point, they all review the footage and they all blame Tristan, the poor pregnant girl.
At the end of that tape footage, they do all run off into the woods with knives.
Yeah, they do, to kill
to run 20 minutes through a forest where most of them don't know where they're going.
There is a nasty choppy your pee-pee sequence, to shoehorn in a wrestling reference.
Oh yeah, we have to have one every week, so that's Val Venus and Kai and Ty from 1999.
Yes, there is a man gets his choppy choppy pee-pee whilst he's tied to a tree.
Yeah,
off in life. They got eviscerated.
Yeah. Mm, choppy, choppy pee-pee.
Oh, choppy, choppy pee-pee.
Yeah.
Maybe I saw a different version, David.
Oh. Rob, carry on.
So at this point, everyone blames Tristan, the former pregnant girl, who's either possessed or a psycho, it seems. And I have to give the kill of the week to this kill, because it's the only one, really, is where Stephen shoves Tristan off the sort of balcony bit, and she breaks her neck on a noose.
Oh, we've rushed through quite a bit of interesting character stuff that does. Right.
We've missed quite a bit there, haven't we?
Yeah.
Fill me in, lads.
We've missed the nail file, have we not? No, this is. Yeah. We've missed the nail file and we've missed Peggy.
We've missed the nail file by a long shot, to be fair.
We've missed Peggy, who is the lady who sells the beer.
I introduced Peggy earlier when I was talking about the scene.
This is the kind of the problem with this film is that we all remember it in a very different order.
Like I was watching it with Eleanor, she did not remember any of this stuff, having seen it a dozen times already.
Yeah, so I mean, do we know about Peggy and the nail file now?
No, we have seen the nail file with blood on it.
We've seen the nail file with blood on it, we do not know.
Right.
Which she's brought back from the beer run.
And the slowest ever car crash committed to film.
But it's never explained why she's got the nail file until the end.
And this is what's coming up now. So after the killing of Tristan, the hanging of Tristan,
Who is very aggro. In this scene.
Yes.
She's very aggro.
Very aggressive, very possessed.
Clearly quite distressed.
Yes, absolutely.
But she's angry and kind of goading them on.
Yeah, but
in
now
this sequence.
Yeah, exactly. But now then we suddenly flash to the sheriff's station, and that's when all the pieces start to drop together in the last 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So there's a montage of intercut sequences of all the players being interviewed, and their videos and the things that have been recorded are played back to them, and they don't exactly fucking play the way that the film's played out.
It's a very different attitude. It's a very different story we're now being told,
and
isn't it?
There's a quote that is said three times in the film by James Franco, which is very important, and I'm going to try and get it right. It's film lies, video tells the truth. He says it three times. Film lies, video tells the truth, which is obviously the film has told things how they didn't happen to us.
Yep.
But the videos they watch back in the evidence rooms are actually what happened. So film,
lies.
Video. This is kind of what... have you seen Diary of the Dead?
No, I haven't.
George Romero film.
We have, unfortunately. That film kind of touches on this a little bit.
I liked it.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's all right.
The message is... It's the same kind of message as this, is that, like, what is viewed through the viewfinder subjectively is not necessarily the whole truth.
Yeah.
But what is going on with the found footage around them is actually what happens.
Yeah.
So that's where this film is trying again to do something interesting. But
yeah, it meditates on mass hysteria a lot, doesn't it? When it turns out that in many ways, you know, it's left open-ended as to what is the correct interpretation of the truth, but ostensibly it's revealed that they have basically lost their shit and killed...
Yeah.
Killed the collection of...
And the collection of tourists.
Of tourists, and then either killed and then...
Yeah, but because of the video cameras and the CCTV that are set up, I think, again, if we had a director's cut of this, this would all make so much more sense. But with the footage that we're given, it's all kind of vaguely pieced together and we can kind of make sense.
It's mad fun, though, isn't it? It's really fun to watch.
It is a lot of fun to watch. I mean, there is a really good film. There's a really good idea.
Yeah.
As I said, I'd love to see the director's original story, because if the studio have put this out thinking it's better, that... somebody somewhere has fucked up on a level that is just
mm-hmm.
because I can't understand why you'd release this.
No.
I mean, $15 million you said it took. They spent.
Mm-hmm.
You can write that off. You know, if you're a film having made nearly $500 million from the first one,
yes,
losing, saying just writing it off and starting again,
yeah,
is not a huge decision when you've got that kind of capital behind you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what has possessed them to completely ham-fisted and fuck it up
mm-hmm.
to this point?
Yeah,
is just extraordinary.
I'm pretty sure this is the same studio that gave us two completely different films called The Exorcist 3.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you remember that shit show.
Yeah. Holy smokes, yeah.
The exact same example of this with a retcon afterwards.
Which was
Rennie
Harlin, was it, who did one of them?
Yes.
And then...
of Cutthroat Island fame.
And Paul Schrader did it.
Who broke... If you can bankrupt the film production company that made Terminator 2,
and
Carol Co.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That is actually an achievement.
Yeah,
and still get work.
Yeah.
He still gets work.
Yeah. And Paul Schrader... Paul Schrader, the writer of the original, also did the other one. But yeah, I guess that is Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2, isn't it?
Yeah, really? Everyone's arrested. There is no Book of Shadows in this.
Why is it called Book of Shadows?
Exactly. Possibly the greatest question that you'll ever have.
Yes. Although I did look it up, and a Book of Shadows is a collection of witches' spells.
Ooh, which I suppose are the runes.
Which I suppose are the runes, yeah.
Which were spells,
Wiccan.
So I guess at this juncture it's that time once again. It's time to
The denoiser is not going to cut that out, I'm afraid.
So it's time for the shit and popcorn.
Mate, I think it's time for an half an hour wrap up, to be fair.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Rich, thoughts on the film, please.
I don't know how many times this will turn out in the edit, but as I'm sure I've said, there are 6 or 7 really good ideas, and I think if they'd have picked 2 or 3 of them,
mm-hmm.
they could have had a really, really good film.
You can embellish on this as much as you want,
by the way. The last sort of 35, 40 minutes are actually very good.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, as we discussed earlier with regards to the whole, a really, really good stick everybody. I mean, there's a great quote from Reservoir Dogs. The guys who... When Quentin Tarantino made Reservoir Dogs, he said, the first thing they ever told me at film school was take all your actors to a room and kill them.
Yep.
And actually, if you look at good first films, Halloween is kind of a similar. You take all your actors to a single area and you kill them. Wes Craven does it
mm-hmm.
in Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream. He takes them effectively to 3 houses and kills them all.
Yeah.
And that is a really good thing. And I think you've got a similar situation with this. You've got some... really quite interesting motifs through the film. The idea of the tree being this sort of spiritual connection to evil personified, if you like.
The bigger the tree gets, the more evil it draws towards it.
Of what was the thing in Buffy that always brought evil towards the Hellmouth?
The
idea that the town was built on this point of perfect evil, if you like. So it will always have horrific things happening. You'd got the murder of the witch being stoned. You'd got this Rustin Parr guy killing children. You know, there's always something awful happening in this particular part of the world. And it just happens every generation. You'd got the first Blair Witch, whatever happened to them happens again now. There are some good ideas. I just think it's been butchered. It really has been butchered.
How, if I were to just say these words, this is the weirdest Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV show spin-off ever.
That is actually
In aesthetic, sound, like,
it has,
everything about it.
It
is
has
a TV
that
special.
Kind of teen horror, late 90s. Let's scare you a bit more than an episode of Buffy, but not as much as a
still with TV
Wes Craven film.
We
can do this, but there's no blood.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's that whole thing, isn't it? You're absolutely right.
I mean, Scream was 98, was it? 97?
96.
96? Wow.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yes, and so that would, and this was 99, was it?
This is 2000.
It's 2000.
Crossing that border.
Yeah,
fair enough.
So I mean, I guess it's
thoughts
it's
from Europe.
Thoughts. Would you like to do your thoughts first, Dave?
Is
that all of your thoughts?
Yes, I will do.
You fire away because my thoughts include some pretty mind blowing shit.
So. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll save that for the end. This is up until this point, I have never understood why people go and see The Room every time it is on, like, at local theatres or whatever.
Oh, when they throw spoons at the screen and... London, don't they? Not.
I understand audience participation in films because, you know, sometimes I need to have a few shots of Dutch courage before I go and see a film that, like when I went to see It.
Yeah.
Mate, don't
Well, yeah,
that's coming
that's
soon.
That's a previous
that is coming yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm so glad I'm not
it
on for that one.
It is an audience spectation film. Without, like, a room full of students that I went to see
yeah,
it in,
actually,
that
I
film
imagine.
Wouldn't have hit me in the same way. But because everyone was into it, they laughed at all the right points, they screamed at all the right points, there was popcorn flying everywhere now and again, I got the participation aspect. I get that bit. But I've never understood the... This film is really, really shit, let's go see it. I like shit films, I'll watch them once.
I'm going for a guilty pleasure, There's films I'll watch that are...
This is my answer to The Room. I love this film.
Do you know something? I am going to watch it again. Yeah. I know that had like a really stupid thing to say. Yeah. I'm going to watch it again.
It's simultaneously crap.
Yep.
But simultaneously, there's like Paul Verhoeven-esque.
There's so much going on
in
these things you've said about the words, and I want to go and see it again to see these things.
There's a checklist of things that you need in a 2000s film that are there purely for the sake of being there. But I can't tell whether they're being
satirical
or getting the piss taken out of them.
I think this is the thing of having so many different you know, too many cooks spoil the broth, don't they? Mm-hmm. Too many editors, too many producers spoil the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they'd just picked one, even if they'd picked the worst, if they'd picked the worst strand of the story, but made that film, it would still have been a more competent film. But I'm willing to bet we wouldn't go back and watch it again.
No.
We'd have gone, it's perfectly all right.
Yeah,
it's perfectly fine. You know, 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yep.
I still don't get it after two watches of two different apparent versions.
Well,
but I think maybe because I got that meta experience the first time I watched it, maybe that has coloured it slightly.
The collective hysteria again, isn't it?
Yeah, the fact that me and Eleanor kind of shared an experience where we sat there just like, what the fuck is going on? Maybe that has heightened it. But this film has anchored a nice little special point in my filmic...
You'll never forget this film.
No.
I will not. No, I will watch this
and
once a year.
There cannot be many films that you're... I mean, I don't know. You've done, what, 14 episodes, 15 episodes now?
This is episode 19, mate. 19,
oh, mate, I must have missed a few.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, and you'll continue doing the many... And I mean, how many of the films, when you go, which episode do you remember, are going to be the one that goes... jumps out at you?
Jason X will stick with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That will stick with me. There's obviously films...
My Bloody Valentine sticks with me.
My Bloody Valentine will stick with me as a surprise in, like, what the fuck, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But... This film somewhere, I don't know what it is, there's confusion that comes with it every time I think about it, which doesn't happen with the other ones.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's happened to interpretation.
Yeah.
Speaking of interpretation...
All right, Rob, here we go.
Right.
Because we might have our own after you've done this, but...
Yeah. Let me know what you think of this, lads.
All right, mate. The book is off the knees. He's ready.
He's got the Book of Shadows. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Book of Shadows.
Okay.
Okay, so
no
the
interruptions.
Story here
Everyone go.
Is none of it happened.
Fuck off. All right, Jack Shepherd, come on.
Right. Well, you read it off my fucking shoulder. The scenes of Jeffrey in the mental institution, never explained.
Yeah.
This whole film is his fucking references.
Mm-hmm. It's his fever dream.
Yeah, it's his fever dream. And the reason why the aggressiveness with the scenes of the sheriff is because the sheriff is the guy that put him in the institution.
The sheriff is the guy that sectioned him.
Yeah, nothing, none of this happened.
Mm-hmm.
That is a surprisingly great shout.
Yeah.
Now you've said it, that actually is... Well, it feels... It's every teenage boy's kind of dream. You've got the beautiful, sort of promiscuous, pretty red-headed girl.
Wicked!
The voluptuous, sort of...
yeah, you do.
The, oh, God. Goth, thank you.
This is 12-year-old me having a party right now.
Yeah, exactly.
it's
absolutely,
If you're going to go, I want a really pretty girl, you're going to go... Because she's... That red-headed lady, I don't know who she is now, whether she's still working, I've no idea. But she's... incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
She really is.
Yeah. And they play up at like Spirit of the Forest kind of shit, don't they? They really play up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so, was that your thing? Because you were feverishly writing.
That was my spicy take, mate.
That was your spicy take?
Yeah, yeah, that was the whole thing.
Okay.
So...
I think it happened as is portrayed in the film footage in the evidence room. I think he is nuts. Absolutely. I think the mental hospital stuff is definitely before the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we had a bit of a... We couldn't decide... I mean, did you think it was after?
I was kind of a bit confused, but I think I settled on it being before.
Because at the start of the film, when you get the documentary footage of James Franco, James Franco...
Yeah, he's got hair, hasn't he, the film? But at
at the start, when he's selling stuff on his porch...
Shaven-headed, isn't he?
Yeah.
So that's how I can tell it's... I assume it's before... Whether that's a red herring or
well,
not.
To be fair, before makes more sense with both as what we're saying and with what Rob said, in mm-hmm. that it never happened. So he's
Sorry. Okay. So, in the first film, it is ponderized that when What's-Her-Face is led into the basement, she is led there and the other cameraman is led there by the camera guy that disappears. Mm. He's been possessed by the Blair Witch, and for the third act of the film is the one actively fucking with him, like he pulls out his own teeth and puts it in the bundle sort of thing. And he's the one that clubs her on the back of the head.
Because that's how it ends, you
and
see.
And Rustin Parr is possessed by the witch because she was obviously prodded to death by kids when she was hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
So she's taking revenge on the kids. Seven children.
I think the Blair Witch has possessed fake James Franco, which is why he goes nuts. And he is leading them out there so that there's obviously the whole angle with the miscarriage lady who gets possessed. Is she possessed? Is she not? I don't think she is, because the found footage reveals she's completely innocent in the whole thing and they just kill her because they want to kill a witch. I think she's possessed him and she's through him inside the house the whole time. I think that's the way to go.
I think I'm probably going to go with David on that. Yeah. I think
the possession angle is kind of anchored, especially in the remake as well. They go kind of whole hog on it. I think that's what they're going for.
It's almost like a psychotic episode, isn't it? It's that kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, as we exactly said,
I mean, I don't want to get into that particular scene, but it does... It's carry-on mental institution, basically.
Indeed.
It's as if, you know, the carry-on film crew had done One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's everything everybody who has never experienced something like that would go, this is what happens in these places.
Yes.
Tick, tick, tick.
This is what crazy people are like, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're not like everybody else.
This is what police are like.
Yeah. They're not like everybody else.
Yes.
Exactly. So we've all had our theories.
Yes.
So I guess there's only one thing left to do.
Yeah.
Which is dish up the shit and popcorn. So for Rich's reference...
Chuck some turds around, Rich.
Rich's reference. Just,
okay.
So the shit rating is... Absolute fucking stinker of the lifetime is number 10.
Okay.
Zero is a masterpiece.
And this is the shit rating here is on technical filmmaking kind of parameters.
It's a general across the board. Yeah.
General across the board. Yeah, yeah, so, for instance, my rating for Jason X, I think, was like a 9-10.
Yeah, yeah, because it's terrible.
Shit.
Yeah,
it's just a terrible film.
But it's amazing. Exactly, yeah.
Right, okay.
And your popcorn rating is your entertainment out of it. If you were fully entertained, it's a 10. If you were not entertained at all, it's a 0. So we'll start you off, Rich, with how many turds are you throwing on it?
I think it's about a 6. 6 or 7, because I think...
That's quite reserved, to be fair.
I think it's...
Again, there are some bits that are technically very well... You know, as we said, there are some bits that are really well done. There's an act and a half, or three quarters of an act that's perfectly acceptable. You know, the last sort of act two and a half, if you like, once they lock themselves away, so 2 to 3 is pretty good. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's good fun. You know,
yeah,
it's,
for sure.
It works as a... That bit works as a film.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
cool.
Popcorn
and
rating.
Popcorns, yeah.
I will watch it. I will watch it again. And now David said what he said. Dave, sorry. Why do I keep calling him fucking David? Now Dave said what Dave said, and there's
read
so
the
much
IMDb
more to go
trivia.
Back and say.
Read the Wikipedia. There's a dedicated wiki for Blair Witch.
An actual
entire wiki.
Yes.
See, I don't know how to.
Like Star Wars has its own Wikia page. So if you go to Blair Witch Wiki,
you'll
find it.
Because there's so much fucking insanity about Muppets in space.
How many buckets are you chucking on it, son?
I am going to go for a 7.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I'm going to go for an 8. Actually, fucking 8.
I think
there is a lot of entertainment to be had.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
If you realise that technically it's not great, but there are bits that are interesting, there's...
If you think of it outside, if you think of it as a phenomenon and a cultural thing, wow.
I mean, if they could get that website back up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Get your. I mean, what does it cost to get Squarespace to do your website?
You can still look at it.
We need
you can still look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, is it still going?
I thought
it was
gone. Google's archive system saved everything for the last 15 years.
I was about to put in a cheap advert for Squarespace on your podcast then. Because everybody else seems to know.
Oh, no, Keanu Reeves is doing Squarespace. We're all right.
Do we not do endorsements? Fair enough.
So, Rich?
Yes, mate.
Thank you very much for your...
You stared at the wrong ginger person there, didn't you, Robert?
No,
Robert,
ginger
that's, oh. That's racist.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Hang on, you guys need to do your...
Hang on.
Dave's
let's
next.
Get our man with a plan, the man with no tan, the Duke of Spook, the Doc of Shock. Chris Wilson, popcorns and turds, how are you doing out there?
Oh, God. I've killed a man.
So yeah, now Wilson's got his views in. How about you, Dave? What do you think?
Turds.
Yeah.
I'm going to heap a very good 6 on it.
Yep.
A hearty amount of turds. Too many, one might say, for one shovel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it is shit.
Yeah.
As a complete filmic picture, if you were to buy the DVD with no outside experience. If you were 16 right now, you bought a DVD, you watched it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
6 turds.
Yeah. Yeah. And the popcorns?
My name's Chris Wilson. This is the Wicker Man. 10 popcorns.
You find actually 10 popcorns.
Holy smokes.
Your girlfriend's got to you.
I should hope so.
I mean, yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the amount of stuff that I googled after seeing it the second time.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I mean, as we
it
were
got
just
me.
Discussing.
The Blair Witch Hysteria got me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I came in intending to give it sort of 7 or 8 turds for its filmic ability and 3 or 4 turds for enjoyment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Having discussed it over the last... How long is this edit going to be?
This isn't actually the longest episode so far. Yeah, no, with clips, it will be, but with everything, understanding it better.
I've basically flipped my initial.
Yeah, yeah.
Having
yeah.
discussed
this is my answer to the room. This is my Chris Wilson's Wicker Man.
Yeah.
If they show this in a cinema, I will go and watch it.
Mm. Yeah.
I absolutely will go and watch this with Rob. An entire room full of idiots. Yes. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yes. So I'm going to dive in with mine now. So turds, I'm going to put 7 on it. It's pretty fucking shit.
There's a lot of poo in there.
Yeah, a lot of poo in there. For the pure madcap nature of it, and the fact that there's hilarious things like the owl in there.
I forgot about the owl.
I'm going to also put 7 buckets of popcorn on it. It's a 7 and a 7.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a nice little turnaround. Yeah. When you announced it, I expected 10 turds, 0 popcorn, to be honest.
No.
Oh,
he's
always a surprise,
so,
isn't
he? So we'll wrap things up with it from here, but we'll just try and get in touch with Chris Wilson one more time in the woods outside Burkittsville, Maryland, if we may.
Wilson, how are you getting on in your tent, mate?
I feel ill. Blacking out, I think.
Hey, Wilson, it's Rob. Just a quick one. Hope you're all right, and I hope you're doing all right over there. Hope everything's okay. Now, mate, the next film, the next one's Dave's choice. Dave, tell Wilson what we've got next.
It's Jeepers Creepers 3, Christopher.
Is that the one with the bus?
No, that's 2.
Is that 2? Oh, fair enough.
Wilson's hung up on us. He's obviously not very happy with that. Sorry.
Fuck this.
Yeah, it's in the new release. You're going to have to pay full price for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
So, fuck you. So, yeah, I guess that leads us to our final goodbyes, really, for this fortnightly installment of Cinemortuary.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in truth, we actually hung Rob from the stairs half an hour ago.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not the real
and
one.
And I was never here. Yeah. And Dave's just been in a room talking to himself for the last 2.5 hours.
But, yeah.
So, I guess it's a goodbye from Dave.
Goodbye, or is it?
It's a goodbye from our early 2000s FHM correspondent, Rich Fodsworth.
Goodbye, Gail Porter's bottom.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Goodbye, everyone. Are we off out on the piss, yeah?
Yeah! Look out, York, here we come.
Whether you could tell or not, pre-drinks actually started about 2 hours ago.
Oh, God. Have I just ruined your entire podcast?
Wrong. Somebody fucked with this tape! Somebody fucked with that tape!
Don't forget, you can follow us and keep up with all our updates at Cinemortuary on Twitter, / Cinemortuary on Facebook, and of course at Cinemortuary on Instagram. I don't know how you do pictures of podcasts, but we're going to do that anyway.
Said you wanted evolution. BA was a great big hit. Yes, it was. You said you wanted revolution, man. And you say that you're full of shit. We're disposable teams, we're disposable teams, we're disposable teams, we're disposable.